Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague, Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. The CHIPS Act, it has an elaborate name, but it comes down to the initiative by the Congress and the president who signed the law to bring forward a legislation that rewards chip makers, high-end stuff, Intel, AMD, to bring their factories home from China. This has to do with the risk of dealing with overseas supply chains in the most critical of manufacturing items, which is the microchips that make it possible for me to talk to you, for example, and your iPhone to function when you turn it on. However, there's a twist here. It's a big number, $280 billion. The Republicans and the Democrats both voted for it. The president signed it. But, Richard, complete surprise to me that the former governor of Rhode Island, Gina Raimondo, announcing that there will be some caveats, some details, some small print in this Microchips Act. And one of them is that there are going to be requirements that, for example, you offer social services, a variety of social services, and you keep that and you maintain those social services, though you're running a factory for profit. And you will be regulated, inspected by the government if they're adequate, such as childcare. Another extension has to do with sharing profits. It's very unclear. And to explain all this, the Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo, the former governor, said, if Congress wasn't going to do what they should have done, we're going to do it in implementation. Richard, what's going on here? Is this bait and switch? Thank you.
Well, you should be your own guest, John. Of course, it's a form of bait and switch, and it's probably one that's illegal as well. First of all, there's always two ways in which you could start to deal with a comparative imbalance between what's taking place in the United States and overseas. The way that the Biden administration and too many Republicans do say, well, what we do is we simply subsidize the production in the United States in order to make it more attractive here than it is somewhere else. But the moment you start giving subsidies, it means that you've embedded every inefficiency in the domestic system. What you always want to do is, before you even think about a dime of subsidy, is to ask, what forms of regulation have you imposed on a particular industry? Has it hampered the ability of firms to get to market, to raise capital, and all the other stuff? And this would mean you'd have to look very closely, for example, at the securities regulation, which make it very, very difficult for private corporations to go public in the United States. And there are probably 1,000 other things that you'd have to look at as well. But you sweep all of that under the rug, and then you decide you're going to give a subsidy. And of course, the question is it an outright subsidy or is it a conditioned subsidy? And the statute as it was drafted was just an outright subsidy, which is silly. But then what it turns out is she says, look, if Congress didn't do what they should have done, we're going to do it by way of implementation. Well, she's saying, what we're going to do is we're going to add on additional provisions to the statute as though they were written by Congress and try to enforce them. I regard this as blatantly unconstitutional. For one thing, what happened is you wanted to have, say, $40 billion sent to chip production. By the time you get done with the conditions, every one of these things has to be funded. And so what the bill looks like is now $30 billion for chips and $10 billion for social welfare. Congress didn't pass that. And so it's just another variation on the major questions doctrine. How is it that an administration, by a series of executive rules, can turn a statute topsy-turvy and make it do a bunch of things that Congress had explicitly refused to do? The Wall Street Journal simply points out the outrage and sort of shrugs its shoulders. My view about this is ripe for kind of a challenge. There are all sorts of conditions that you can impose on these grants. For example, if somebody says, we want you to make chips, and then somebody starts turning around and making something else with that money, you can say, sorry, that's outside the scope of the program. And so what we will require you to do each year is to report the way in which you spent the subsidy so we can find out whether or not it was consistent with this program or outside of it. So regulations like that are perfectly good, because the key thing of a valid regulation is that it basically advances the fundamental end of the basic statute and fills in the detail so as to make sure that the money is not going to be misappropriated. But this is exactly the opposite. Here, in fact, what the statute does, or the regulations to the statute do, is to misappropriate the money and to force it to be spent on something else. And of course, this is the progressive playbook, and there's nothing dumber, as far as I'm concerned, on the subject matter stuff than trying to get the United States to intervene as a form of silly industrial policy to indicate whom you hire, how you pay them, where you locate your plant, whether or not you allow for stock redemptions or a bunch of things of that particular sort. Labor markets should be left by and large unregulated, and so what the administration is doing is they're taking a bunch of public money spent to improve a particular project, and then they're spending it on gumming up labor markets, making it more difficult for people in this industry and in every other industry to work well. And this is perfectly consistent with the presidential playbook. The man has always said that unions are God's gift to everybody instead of treating them as what they should be, as a series of cartels that disrupt industrial production. And then he starts to put all these conditions on it. So I think this thing should be ripe for a constitutional challenge. And somebody who gets the grant should basically be able to go into court and to challenge, or a trade association be able to challenge, the notion on the grounds that the conditions are illegal and therefore are void, because they're utterly inconsistent with the tenor of the statute. Just think of it, John. If you can attach any particular condition, or what you can say is, oh, you know, what we really want you to do now is to give a large number of dollars to various kinds of homeless shelters in various communities. I'm not saying homeless shelters are a good or a bad thing for these purposes, but if so, they should be done directly by congressional authorization, not by deflecting funds without any congressional authorization for their expenditures, for programs for which Congress has explicitly rejected it. So there is the constant theme that all revenue bills essentially have to begin in the House of Representatives and have to go through Congress as an appropriation. And what they're doing is they're essentially making an appropriation by executive fiat. The Biden administration is, as best I can tell, the most lawless administration on public matters that this country has ever had. They're much worse than the Obama administration in their current information or current situation, and far worse than the Trump administration as well. This thing has got to stop. It is just an absolute abuse of presidential power. And when people start talking on the Democratic side about how it's necessary to be returned to our great democratic roots and so forth, they cannot be speaking about the usurpation of power done by the most lawless president in the history of the United States.
We just have a couple of minutes, and this is a huge question, but you've taught me over the years. Is this a stealthy version of the NRA of 1933, industrial policy?
Yes, this is the exact same stuff that we had during the 1930s, where you constantly try to put codes of competition on various sorts of things and various kinds of entry conditions into getting into various kinds of market. I wrote a book some 30 years ago called Bargaining with the State, which was dealt with the unconstitutional conditions doctrine. And essentially, the problem is very simple to state, but extremely important to understand. Whenever the government taxes and gives money out, whenever the government imposes regulation, it does something which only it can do by virtue of its unique power of the state. It's a monopoly. And as we learn from the antitrust law, private firms, if they impose certain kinds of conditions, they will be struck down on the grounds that they're illicit efforts to try to expand their monopoly power beyond its proper base. And exactly the same problem applies when you get to the United States or to anything. So an early illustration of what the difficulty is about. Suppose I said, John, do you like to drive in the state of New York? Well, we'll let you drive in the state of New York on New York roads, but only if you agree to litigate every dispute that you should have in the next 10 years in New York courts.
We have one minute, Richard.
So then what happens? You say, you mean in order to drive in New York State, I have to agree to dissolve my marriage in New York State, even though I'm living in Connecticut and so forth? You can't impose conditions like that. And so what is absolutely needed is every time the government puts a program in place, somebody has to look long and hard to see whether or not the conditions that are imposed are designed to advance the efficiency of the program, or whether they're designed to divert wealth to collateral and illegitimate end. And the Biden administration is the past master at making those illegal diversions.
Professor Richard Epstein, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.